Hello and welcome back to Let the Stone Speak. I'm Brent Nuchtigal, the host of the program. Nothing captures attention like shipwrecks, ancient shipwrecks, and the cargoes that they once held. And this is what we're going to talk about on today's program. The cargo itself isn't gold, isn't silver, it is iron, and specifically the discovery off the coast of Israel of iron blooms dating back some 2,600 years. This is the time period of the biblical king Josiah ruling from Judah, and a period about 100 years or so after the northern tribes of Israel had been deported from the area. And you have a period of Assyrian, then Egyptian, then Babylonian domination. And somewhere in that time period, there is a shipwreck just off the coast at the harbor of Dor. And now they're finding for the first time a collection of iron blooms from this early period. So that's what we're going to have for you today, an interview with Dr. Tzila Eshel from the School of Archaeology and Maritime Cultures at the Haifa University, not too far from the location these were found. Don't forget, if you like our content, like this podcast, please like and subscribe to our channel. You can also receive our print magazine. It's called Let the Stone Speak as well. It comes out 6 times per year. Today is actually print day for the next volume that should be shipped to the printer and then shipped out to you if you're already a subscriber. It's absolutely free. And so all you need to do is go to our website, armstronginstitute.org, sign up for it there, or you can write an email to letters@armstronginstitute.org. and put your name and address, and we'll make sure you get on the mailing list. But here's the interview with Professor Tzila Eshel. Dr. Tzila Eshel, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
I'm a professor now.
You are? Oh, you're a professor now. Oh, yeah. Congratulations. So, University of Haifa, yeah. Zinman Institute of Archaeology.
Yes.
Well, congratulations. So, Professor Tzila Eshel, thank you for joining our show. An amazing new discovery or a new publication following your work of a shipwreck cargo that was found off the coast of Dor that we'd like to talk about with you. You're the lead author in this article. It's in Heritage Science, Earliest Iron Blooms Discovered Off the Carmel Coast, Revised Mediterranean Trade in Raw Metal, circa 600 BCE. This is brand new information, and it kind of is changing our understanding of how metal was, or how iron was traded or shipped in the ancient world. Can you please give us some of the details of where it was discovered and then what sets medium of metal transfer, I guess, as opposed to like an ingot or something like that?
So these iron blooms were discovered in the Dor Lagoon, which is just off shore of Tel Dor. And it's a quite large, but shallow lagoon, mm-hmm. One water. And it was discovered, unearthed in a maritime excavation headed by Professor Asaf Yasur Landau and Professor Tom Levy from San Diego. And they brought to me one of these blooms. They said, we found a heavy rock. What is it? We have a few. And so we thought maybe it's lead because it was very, very heavy. But we quite quickly understood that it's made of iron.
So can you explain what the difference is between a bloom, how a bloom takes place in the process of taking the iron ore and then producing something else with it?
So the something else would be a billet, okay? We would call it a billet. And the billet is like a equivalent of an ingot, okay, or other metals. And the reason we don't have ingots in iron is because iron was not reaching its molten state while produced. And remind me later, I'll send you a nice video on YouTube, 10-minute video from a group from Poland who produced the iron blooms. And you can see the process. And you can see how the bloom comes out in a solid state. Mm-hmm. And while the slag is being streamed out. So the slag is molten, but the iron remains solid. And that's why we don't have ingots. We have blooms. The blooms come out of the furnace as a sponge, meaning they're solid, but they have a lot of pores because it never consolidated as a liquid. And so what the metalsmith would do is he would take the bloom and he would start working on it with big hammers and heavy hammers and consolidate the bloom into a billet. And so we usually would expect to find in cargoes of ships, and this is a common find in cargoes of ships, iron billets. And these
So
billets would
a
be.
billet is the impurities have been removed via the beating process rather than the heavy smelting process. Okay.
Exactly, heavy,
Okay.
and the bloom comes out heavy, and it comes out dirty, and it comes out full of slag and pores, and the billet is much more consolidated and clean, and this can be then shipped or traded to the metalsmith who would produce from it artifacts.
Okay.
The basic reason that blooms were consolidated into billets is because it was actually taking advantage of the energy. The bloom comes out very, very hot, and you can use this energy to consolidate it rather easily.
So typically, as we understood it before, all this process of taking it, the iron ore, you get the bloom, and then the billet is produced in one heating or one episode. But the fact that you find blooms being transported shows that there was sometimes this process was split up between point A and point B.
Exactly. Yes. Why is that important?
Yeah.
There are quite a few studies on iron smithies in the southern Levant, in Megiddo, in Tel Tzafi, in Dor, and other major Canaanite cities. And or I don't know if Canaanite would be the right word because we're talking about the Iron Age, but major cities, major urban centers. And what we see is that fragments of blooms were found in these smithies. And this brought up a debate and a long-going argument. Were these smithies or were these actually iron-producing furnaces? So a smithy is a place that is a place where there's an iron smith. He receives a billet and he works it to make out of it an artifact. But if we find blooms, then the archaeologists and archaeometallurgists assume that the whole chain operatoire, the whole production process took place in one site. The minute we show that blooms were traded, this changes our understanding about these sites. They were smithies. They received blooms, and they instead of receiving billets, they received blooms, and that's why we find the blooms in the site. So it changes the whole concept about smithies in the Iron Age.
And those other sites where you're talking about this debate, these other urban centers, how early on are you finding these with these date? Because the discovery that we'll talk about the dating, this dates to the late 7th, looks like late 7th century BCE. And this prior evidence of potential maybe separation of this process, what do they date to?
Earlier, they're the Iron 2A, Iron Age 2A, mid 10th century, something like that. So they're earlier. And
Okay.
it doesn't imply necessarily that it happened, but it opened the option, the possibility to such an interpretation.
Well, but now we know that it did happen at least 300 years after that, based on the facts. So what would benefit the smith the person transporting this to leave it in the bloom stage rather than taking it further to the billet?
So the thing is that when we find billets in underwater excavations, they're all corroded. And when we found the bloom, it's still preserved in its amazing state, as if it was produced yesterday. The iron is totally uncorroded. It's very well preserved. So when we see this preservation state, sorry, we understand that they had some benefit from wasting energy and not consolidating their blooms. But they received something that can be transported without corrosion in especially overseas.
So you can imagine, I guess, an iron distributor sending billets, getting to the destination for whatever reason, it took a long time. Maybe it was stored for a while. Maybe it did sink and it's all corroded. And the purchaser is like, hey, you gave me bad stuff. And this is going to make sure that during transportation, there's no, that the item itself would stay intact, the iron.
It might be transportation. It might be something that is known to that needs to. It will take time until it will be used. So it has.
Okay.
You need patience until it will be worked. It's not work tomorrow morning. And so anything that can avoid corrosion is it's worth the effort or the waste of energy.
So, as far as the cargo goes, how many of these were found? And how does it
Nine.
nine like so nine balls or
Bloom. Nine bloom.
I know they're blooms, but I'm trying what shape
Yeah.
are they for people?
Oh, they're like more or less square.
Okay. How
And
much do they weigh?
I didn't weigh them actually, but they're quite heavy.
Okay.
I think they're about this size,
Okay.
and I would estimate like 20 kilos one. They're
Oh,
quite
wow.
heavy when you pick it up, and it's like
Okay.
they're quite heavy. And but they're also covered with ready patina from the sea, so it's not only the bloom. It has like quite a thick layer around
And so what you did, I suppose, is get one of these delivered to you from the marine archaeologists, and then you crack it open in some fashion and sample it. Is there any information from this process that you can garner from where it came from, or even the dating? How would you arrive at that, some of that information?
So we took it to the we did this research with colleagues in the Technion from the Metal Institution, Dr. Shmuel Arieli and Dr. Andre Yoffe, and they had we have a saw in our in my lab, but it wasn't big enough for this bloom, so they have a larger equipment, and they helped us cut through the this bloom. And then we were surprised to find in the center of the bloom, in one of the pores, a small charred piece of wood. And so this was very nice because first of all, we sent it to Professor Daphna Langot, who did a botanic analysis and identified the type of a tree. It's a young branch of some kind, but also we took it for carbon-14 dating along with other seeds that were found nearby. And
From the
this
shipwreck.
enabled us. Yes. And this, first of all, you might ask, so who says that it's one shipwreck? Maybe the blooms and the ceramics near it are from, but here we have a piece of charcoal from within the bloom. You can't it's undebatable. So it's very, very nice. We're very happy to find that. And this gave us some kind of a chronological horizon because it falls on the plateau. So we have like between 800 and I don't know, mid 6th century BC. And then we had to do something, some a little bit of a mathematics with the short-lived seeds and things like that. This was done by Zach Donseth from USBC. And another thing that gave us the chronological frame are the basket handles that were found, which are very, very indicative of a specific time period, the late 7th, early 6th century. So together, all this together could give us some kind of chronological frame.
And are you able to tell, I guess, where iron is sourced? I guess that the big question then to me is you've got a shipwreck off the main port for the in what would be considered this territory that was Israel. I know at this point Israel had already disappeared or had been removed. But you have a shipwreck here by the port. Do we have any sense of is it leaving or is it coming?
So it's a good question, and I know that the petrographic analysis is due soon on the basket handles, so maybe we will know more. It's a big thing because Dor is a big port, but not in the 7th century. And we don't know a lot about Dor in this period. It's the period in which the Assyrians already left the region, And probably the Egyptians have some kind of impact or rule on the region just before the Babylonians destruct the whole area. So something is happening there, and we see a lot of things coming in with the Egyptian under Egyptian rule. First of all, these basket handles, they're more common under Egyptian and later Persian period. We see a trade. This I can tell you from a research I've done on other metals. We see for the first time silver coming in from the Aegean, and we see also ceramics coming from the Aegean. Things are happening in East Greek, what we call East Greek ceramics. Things are happening under Egyptian rule, and so it is possible that the iron is also coming in together with this. It's often this short Egyptian period is often gone unnoticed, and we're not aware that that it's quite a big power, you know, the Egyptian Egypt, and they might have the resources and the ability to mobilize these iron blooms.
Yeah, I'm just the first thing I did when I read through the paper here this morning was just see how it matched up with what was found in Area X in Megiddo and published last year by Finkelstein and Adams, that they believe that they found evidence of in Area X of this late 7th century Egyptian presence based on Egyptian pottery they found there. They also found pottery from the Aegean they found there. They even found, as they published, a little piece of iron from a defensive clothing for I forget what you would call that. And I was thinking, well, this cargo matches, at least it seems at this point, very similar dating to when they have an Egyptian presence at Megiddo, which is a short distance, relatively short distance from the port at Dor. So perhaps this is, one and the same kind of concept. What are your thoughts?
We
Did
have
you?
it in many other sites, by the way. We have it in Ashdod, and if you heard of Matzat
Yes.
Hashaviyahu, with a lot of East Greek pottery and Egyptian, and maybe there were Egyptian mercenaries and all that. So if you go into the details, there's quite a lot of evidence from this very short period.
So in terms of biblical history, there is an episode related to King Josiah, which would overlap this period where he is venturing to the north and he's trying to try and cut off the Egyptian army as they're moving through to help the Assyrians against the Babylonians. And so this kind of fits. You're in this space of what we would call kind of a no man's land, where it's the empire that is big is kind of gobbling up the territory of northern Israel for a certain time period, and it hasn't been examined, or at least archaeologically, we just don't have that much information. But it seems like this is really coming to light.
We also don't have the precise date of when this happened, and we don't know how long it was. It might have been a period of 20 years. It might have been 30 years, 40 years. We don't really know. But we have, but it's a period in which a lot of evidence is there because something very different is happening. So it's very noticeable.
So as far as just to help us kind of understand whether it was leaving, I guess, are there iron reserves that were active or iron ore active around the in the southern Levant that could have been a source of this?
So there's the biggest iron ore known is in Ajloun in Jordan. One of my colleagues, Professor Adi Eliyahu Behar, has been dedicating her research in the past 20 years looking for additional iron resources. I don't know if there's any specific ores that could be identified. But what she did is she built her own iron furnace and took ore from different places and tried to produce iron. Some of it was very successful. And then the problem is that now you have to provenance the ore and compare it to the artifacts, which is not so simple. She has been using chemical and osmium isotopes to try to connect between the ore and items. There is quite a lot of overlap, so it's not so easy to distinguish between them. But they're probably may have been additional ores. Iron is quite an abundant metal on the crust, on the Earth's crust.
And so one other thing we haven't mentioned is what would have these been used for? I mean, if they're going to all this effort to ship iron, what type of manufacture of things would be used around the late 7th century for iron?
So we find knives, we find agricultural tools like a plow. I saw not long ago from I think the Hellenistic period or Persian Hellenistic from Ein Chofetz a beautiful and enormous plow. It looks like a modern one, not modern, modern, like 100 years ago. It's what people would still be using. Axes, swords. Anything that used to be produced from copper and bronze is now being produced from iron.
Amazing. Okay, well, is there anything else you think we should cover before we wrap this up? Thank you so much for doing a very quick interview. You had very short time
No.
awareness before, and I pushed you to do it today. And I understand Israel's in a continuous situation that is very difficult, and life kind of you do your best to keep
Yeah.
moving. But there is kind of a standstill with a lot of other things. You said you were not able to go to the university for some time in your
Yeah, there's
work.
no shelter near my lab, so the whole building is not allowed to come, unfortunately. But it's things like that that keep us going. I'm happy to give an interview. I'm happy to do research. It makes things easier for me than just watching the news and taking care of the kids and
Absolutely.
so
Keeps the mind busy.
exactly.
So, is there anything else that I've missed that it's important to cover? You think we're good?
No, I think we're good. I think we're good, and I hope you enjoy the find and learn a bit more about the iron production process, which is very unique and special and so different from other metals. It's a the whole question of the transition from bronze to iron is a very interesting question. If iron is so abundant, why it took people so much time to use iron? And it's probably because of its very unique production process, which was very different from anything people knew before. And so it took time to get a hang on things.
Well, I do think, and that your scientific paper, it's actually quite easy to read, I think.
Oh, thank
What's
you.
yeah, I do think it's easier than a lot of others. So if I'm going to leave it in the show notes, people can access that. It's open access to anybody. And I definitely think it's if people are interested in this biblical period, late biblical period, metalworking and how iron was used and transported and going through this process of iron specifically, it breaks it down. Got some good graphics in there as well to help us. So thank you very much. Well done. We look forward to what you're working on next.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you very much for watching the program today. If you liked the content, please go ahead and subscribe to our channel. And also, don't forget about our 40-page color biblical archaeology magazine, Let the Stone Speak. It's available for you for free. Simply go to our website, armstronginstitute.org, and you'll see a place on the front page to sign up. Or you can write an email to letters@armstronginstitute.org. Put your name and address. We'll make sure you are signed up for our magazine. Also, check out the show notes of today's program below. In it, you'll have the paper that I meant we were talking about, and you'll also have the video that she mentioned going through the process of iron smelting. Thank you very much.